Chapter 1. Constable Riehl, you're headed to Herderstrasse with three men. You know the place, the little bakery, and be careful. The constable rises from his footstool and stands to attention. Yes, Lieutenant. While the four policemen are slowly getting ready, awkwardly checking their pistols and adjusting their shakos, a young, gaunt constable has risen from his seat and is now headed for the door. Where to, Lemke?
Just dropping off a letter, sir.
The lieutenant eyes him with suspicion as the man hurries away. Obscure fellow, this Lemke guy. Thinks too much, reads books, goes to meetings, friendly with former Baltic fighters. The lieutenant is getting angry. Lemke better not cause him any trouble. There is already more than enough trouble in these crazy times. Break-ins, strikes, revolts, that's plenty for his service. No more. Anything but those damned politics. A rotten business, fit for suicidal maniacs. Ideals, well and good for confirmands and volunteers. But don't you dare bother someone who volunteered for the war and had to live through November 1918 with your ideals.
The lieutenant pauses. Lemke was on his way to the mailbox, wasn't he? So why is he going for the telephone booth?
Constable Lemke feeds the coin into its slot, asking for Steinplatz 4518. Jesus Christ, it takes way too long to get an answer. Finally. Steinplatz 4518. Hinemann Bakery?
Yes, sir.
Please call Mr. Masman.
Lemke is getting impatient. Every additional minute is suspicious because the mailbox is only a few yards away from the Zoologischer Garten police station.
Carl?
Yes?
You'll be getting some visitors. Four men. In about 15 minutes.
Thank you, got it.
Over and out.
Over and out.
Lemke slams down the receiver, satisfied. At the police station, he bumps into Commando Riehl.
Good luck, Riehl.
Riehl, a die-hard social democrat, gives him a good-natured smile. We'll get those bastards eventually, Lemke, and that will be it for those never-ending adventures of theirs.
Lemke's features are hardening as he looks after the four policemen headed to Hardenbergstrasse.
Devil knows, playing hide-and-seek with comrades is not a pretty sight. But the men on Herderstrasse are closer to this soldier's heart. And now, they are warned. A hand rests heavily on Lemke's shoulder.
The lieutenant.
When did you start sending your letters via phone booth, Lemke?
Just a little white lie, lieutenant. I had to call my girl.
The lieutenant scrutinizes the constable from narrow eyes.
You aren't being particularly careful.
Lemke pulls himself together and looks at his superior officer with clear eyes.
Perhaps there exists a higher loyalty in this world, one which excuses even great imprudences.
The lieutenant is not comfortable with this kind of talk. By no means did he want to start a political discussion. He simply wanted to give the constable some advice, just between colleagues. After all, Lemke had once been a brave non-commissioned officer, who had faced off the enemy and received both the Silver Wound Badge and the Iron Cross First Class.
You have to come to your senses, Lemke. The war is over. You've risked your head more than enough times. And you have sworn an oath to uphold the Republic.
Lemke's face has taken on a contemptuous air. Unfortunately, this rather excessive turnover of oaths has resulted in a devaluation.
The lieutenant's voice turns quiet.
I did not hear that. This would be reason enough for a treason trial.
Lemke remains quiet, but his face still displays sneering contempt.
The lieutenant has become nervous. He resents having to admit that he is offended by his subordinate's superior spirit.
I will be watching you. Behave yourself accordingly.
Yes, sir.
Lemke checks the time. 5 minutes until his next patrol. It is a cold winter. There hasn't been such hard frost in living memory. Freezing northeastern winds cut against human skin.
Constable Riehl curses under his breath.
Berlin is a damned madhouse. Nothing but criminals and revolutionaries here. Both right and left wing. What on earth made him think putting in for a transfer from Opole to Berlin was a good idea? He had always been a good social democrat, no doubt about that. For 10 years now, he has been paying his party dues, secretly at first, publicly boasting later. That should entitle him to a position in higher service after all. But Berlin is a disappointment. Where is the city's famed cheerfulness? These are starved people, without vitality or warmth. And girls? They have those in Opole as well.
Constable Riehl starts a conversation about the Folkish movement.
whoever might be funding them. Do his companions think they are already preparing for the next war? The other three are taciturn. What do they care about the Folkish? They're here to do their job, and that's that. There are only a few people out on the streets, a sausage dealer selling his wares. Constable Reel shudders when he considers the contents of these suspicious-smelling sausages. Just recently, a killer was arrested, who processed his exclusively female victims into such sausages, the exact same kind that were sold in the streets of Berlin, typically around midnight. What a horrible city. Such a thing would have been unthinkable in Opole. A couple of whores try to get the policeman's attention, their shrill voices clamoring for victims. But today, not even a drunkard would consider helping himself to those pathetic creatures, blue and frozen as they are. Not even their uniforms are safe from the solicitations of these female individuals in their short and saucy skirts. Constable Reel casts a reprimanding glance at the youngest of his comrades, who exchanged a few crude jokes with one of these painted women. They can already see the first few houses of Herderstrasse. Everything wrapped in peaceful darkness. Who would still have lights on at this hour anyway? Your average citizen is so frightened that he crawls into bed at 10 o'clock in the evening and begs his dear God to let him awake the next morning without getting plundered, if it's not too much to ask. They have reached Heinemann's bakery, harmless and sleepy. The four policemen stop for a moment. In the house opposite the bakery, a lamp flares up for just a second. Constable Reel laughs disdainfully. He knows that this is Louise Ostade's place, that little Flemish girl, the bride of Lieutenant Masman. She followed her sweetheart from Belgium. Constable Reel is very familiar with the lives of these adventurers, those obstinate insurgents and front soldiers, who have chosen the Heinemann's bakery as a cauldron for their crazy ideas and plans. But the girl's warning won't save them this time. It takes him just a few leaps to reach the gate from which Louise is about to slip out.
Hold it! Keep it together, missy!
Louise lets out a shrill scream. Reel gets rough.
Shut it, you stupid brat!
Louise allows herself a quiet smile. Carl has been warned. She is almost a little disappointed when Reel returns a few minutes later. Snorting with rage, he has to admit that there is nothing suspicious to be found at Heinemann's bakery. There they are, sitting harmlessly around the table in Heinemann's cozy living room. Lieutenant Carl Masman, working as a newspaper advertiser for the Berliner Local Anzeiger. Sergeant Paul Koenig, called Napoleon. An epithet he earned because of his constant strategic objections in the Baltics. Sergeant Felix Teuscher, who sells parachutes and insurance policies with Koenig. Private Xavel Fuchsberger, who originally just wanted to come to Berlin to visit his Lieutenant Masman, but got stuck and turned into a stand-in for selling the 8 o'clock evening paper, supposedly to meet more people. Then there is the 1917 war volunteer Martin Hark, who has reinvented himself as a student of philosophy. And although Hark is the funniest and cheekiest of them all, Baker Heinemann isn't too far off when it comes to independence of spirit and juiciness of idioms. Mrs. Heinemann, Hark calls her Margelli, a nice, young, carefree girl from East Prussia, seems to be in a good mood. Won't you at least take a seat, officer? We were having so much fun with the game, don't get angry. A nervous Reel drums his thick fingers against the table, causing the soul-destroying game's tokens to dance around the board. The policeman grins sheepishly. There is always something shameful about an unsuccessful raid. They couldn't even find the tiniest of pistols. Hark gets up, his long legs stalking toward the old piano, a cheeky whistle on his lips. Winking, he grins at Reel, then starts banging on the yellowing keys. One girl wants to get up early, 3/4 before dawn. The Blackberry Song. Koenig begins to bellow out the lyrics. His voice is howling and hoarse. Teuscher and Fuchsberger join in, Heinemann and Marielli follow. Louise hums the melody. She has heard it plenty of times, but she just can't quite grasp the meaning of the lyrics. Reel is helpless. He gives them a forced smile and a dismissive wave. Didn't quite work out today. Goodbye for now. Masman has stood up. You shouldn't believe everyone who tries to tell on us. The four policemen hastily clear the bakery. Martin Hark is clever enough to continue with 3 or 4 rougher army songs, and his comrades sing loud enough to be heard throughout the dark, silent Herderstrasse, almost until Steinplatz. When Hark finally lowers his hands, Marielli has tears in her eyes. If only all of this excitement would finally come to an end. She looks at her belly, which holds a child. Louise has sat down on Mazman's lap, cradling her head against her beloved's breast. Hinaman laughs without concern.
Thank God we have Lemka!
Mazman presses a kiss to Louise's forehead and gets up.
It's time we took the weapons to some cellar. One day they'll be found in here after all.
Koenig props up his head against his hands.
Who on earth was that pig?
Fuchsberger laughs.
Don't think too much about it, Napoleon. There are plenty of pigs in Germany, especially when there are rewards for piggishness.
Hinemann points his thumb toward the ceiling.
I don't think we'll have to search that hard. That Lewinsky guy on the upper floor wants us out of the house.
And with that, he walks into his baking room. Margelli screams. She knows that her husband is about to convey his evening blessings through the ceiling into Lewinsky's apartment using his Luger Parabellum.